everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 210. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 5, Episode 20, Spiral, and Angel, Season 2, Episode 20, Over the Rainbow. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. You can find us on this post on hypeable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. My name is Karen. I will be your host today. I'm a super fan, joined by fellow super fan Mai and newbies Ayana and Brittany. Good morning, everyone. Well, some of us are morning. Mai, you did say you just woke up, so I guess kind of it's morning for you, too.
2 hours ago.
Yeah. I mean, I woke up 2 hours ago, too. Okay, we're going to kick it off with fun facts as usual. Brittany, do you have one?
So my fun fact is that when we were recording an episode of Book Club last week, we were talking about movie tie-in novels, and we started talking about these big, giant Disney books that I had when I was little, and Kristen knew of them as well. And they're huge. They're beautifully illustrated, and they have a bunch of, they tell the whole story of the Disney movies. And so while we were recording, Karen said that she didn't know about these, and she didn't know that there was a Hercules one. So I found one really cheap, and I sent it to her before we were done recording, and she just got it yesterday.
It was a glorious day. Adriana, do you have a fun fact?
I do. So this one is also related to that one time I was on Book Hype, and Brittany and I talked about Roxane Gay, and we said how we were too scared to like ever be in the same room as Roxane Gay. Well, yesterday I was in the same room as Roxane Gay during, I went to the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books, and she did a talk, and she's very, very sweet and shy in person, and she had a lovely talk. Oh, that's my awesome. Fun fact.
That's really funny that ended up working out that way.
Yeah.
Mai, what's your fun fact?
To do a non-hockey fact, I listened to S-Town and I didn't like it.
I don't know what that is.
It's a podcast.
Okay. I have seen it kind of floating around, but I have no context whatsoever. Well, that's too bad you didn't like it.
Felt kind of pointless to me.
Well, my fun fact is that I saw Caitlin over the weekend. I went down to Atlanta and met up with her, and I met Gage as well. And it was a whole experience, and he was very shy, but also very excitable. And he really touched me, and he put his head in my lap, and I almost burst into tears because it was a moment. There are pictures online if
it's
anyone
so
wants
cute.
To
I got,
see the wonder on my face.
So I missed the tweet that you sent, but I guess because I still get Twitter emails, I got this email that just said, Karen tweeted, I met Gage. And I was like, well, I got to go to Twitter now and find this. And so I'm really glad that I got that email because then I got to see the cute picture.
Yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. All right, let's jump right into our discussion for today. We're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 520, Spiral. In this episode, Buffy and Dawn are saved by a semi, only to be forced to flee for their lives. After escaping in a blacked-out Winnebago and banging up a few horsies, it all comes to a showdown at an abandoned gas station where the Knights have the Scooby surrounded and Glory swoops in under their spell to steal Dawn away. So the first major thing here is Buffy's reaction to the fact that Glory finally knows that Dawn is the key. And she does not go into fight mode. She goes into flight mode. She's terrified and she decides to pack everybody up and they're just going to run away. And this is pretty different reaction for Buffy. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of that.
I mean, I thought it was smart. I was like, girl, you are not going to beat Glory. Like, you need to get out of there and, like, recoup. Think of something else, because, man, if that semi hadn't come.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was good time for them to recoup. I don't think that if they just kept fighting these small battles, it would have gotten them anywhere. So, like, they're really just scraping by, and they needed time to get away, even if it's just sitting there, like, you know, in silence, like as they're driving or whatever, focusing on Xander's car sickness. It's not they just need to take a break. And this is the only way that they can do that. Whether that was her thought or she was just fleeing out of fear, I mean, it could go either way, but they definitely needed to get away and get a new perspective. Even just fighting on a new landscape puts them, you know, on a more level playing field.
And what did you think about everybody going? Because Spike's like, you know, it should have been me, Dawn, and Buffy, and just heading out, and everybody else either scattering or something. Like, it does put everyone in danger, the fact that they're all here together in the same place.
That did not make sense to me at all. I mean, I understand why she felt like she needed Willow, because Willow is like the only useful person right now in helping to stop Glory. And I mean, if you bring Willow, then she has to bring Tara, because Tara is like sick right now. And Giles is also useful because he can read, but I really don't know what Anya...
Because he can read.
But I really don't know what, like, Anya and Xander were doing there, except that they probably, like, didn't want to get left behind. But really, in an ideal situation, I feel like they all should have split up. And really, what Buffy should have done was to send Dawn away, like, months ago. But
yeah, I think it was probably because of the timing, too. There was no time to argue. Like, that we could have probably had an entire episode being like, no, you can't come. And then like, oh, we're coming anyway. And so I think it was just a smart move to just be like, all right, everybody get in the damn Winnebago, because we just would have had to hear the, but we're here to support you speeches that we've heard like 1,000 times. And so I was happy to not have any of that and to just get on the road and get going, because I think she does need everyone, as much as Xander and Anya don't really make sense to be there. Maybe they could just be the moral support. But I did like the image of Buffy and Dawn and Spike just riding around in a Porsche, but that wouldn't have been practical because Spike would have had to black out all the windows.
Yeah.
Which he's done before.
I know.
Mai, do you think that Xander and Anya add anything to the group?
Anya, maybe.
Because of her knowledge?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Her ex-demony skills. Mm-hmm. And Xander could probably puke on her, I guess.
Projectile vomit can be a weapon.
Yeah, she's vain, so...
And he still has that little slice of military knowledge that keeps popping up and is useful every once in a while, very conveniently, so...
It's true.
And, you know,
I'm not saying he's useless. I think, like, practically, I think it would have been better. They have a higher likelihood of succeeding or of somebody staying alive if they split up.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe have a decoy.
Although that didn't work out so well in Harry Potter. But speaking of Spike, this whole situation kind of forces everybody into the same place, and we really see the dynamic, you know, how everybody is feeling about everybody else in the moment. Giles and Xander are having nothing with Spike. They just do not want him there. But Buffy is set. She, for her, this is a logical, tactical decision. He's strong. He can help protect Dawn. So he has to be there. And on the flip side of that, it's really interesting to see how Spike interacts with everybody else. He's very helpful in this episode and very self-sacrificing. And even when Tara opens the blinds and he gets burnt, he doesn't, you know, attack anyone either verbally or physically. He's like, it's okay, you know, I'm fine. It's healing. Let her play with the sunlight, whatever. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of this, like, slow turn of Spike and how he's reacting to situations like this, where it's not just Buffy anymore. He's being nice to other people now, too.
I thought that the whole scene was, like, weirdly charming. Because, yeah, I wanted to say weird, but then I was like, it wasn't weird. It was...
No.
It was just more surprising that it happened. I was like, oh, like, you know, it's one of those instances where you're, like, annoyed with Spike because you're, like, ready for his old reaction, where he would have just been, like, he would have, like, lashed out, and then everyone else would have had to, like, put him in the corner and scold him. But he, like, quickly realizes, he's starting to, like, realize, like, oh, if I want to stick around and I want to be a part of this group, which I think at this point that's his MO, is he needs to adapt and read the room. And he's reading the room really well. which is saying something about how his character is developing, which is quite interesting to see.
But to his credit, I don't think that he said that about Tara. Like, I don't think he's nice to her just because, like, he wants to get in Buffy's pants, if you know what I mean. Like, his reaction to Tara, I feel like, is very similar to how he reacts to Dawn. How he, like, so quickly was like, no, it's okay. Like, and the look on his face, I don't know if it's, like, because he's a protective person or, like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I didn't even...
It was so sweet.
Yeah, I didn't even see or think about the motivation, behind it relating to Buffy in any way. I think I took it as he just wants to be a part of this group as a whole, not, like, for some reason, lately, I haven't even been seeing the Buffy connection, like, at least the last two episodes where I'm like, oh, he's doing everything just to get with Buffy. I think that it's shifting a little bit, and he's realizing that there's a bigger thing here, which is being part of something and not just on his own living in a crypt.
And if you think about the fact that he was injured, like, your first instinct as a human being, as a vampire, whatever, is to lash out. But he was in a lot of pain, and then he calmed himself down to have that reaction toward Tara. So I think that, you know, even above and beyond, his first instinct should be to lash out, and it wasn't. So it is very telling. I agree. So while all this is going on, of course, Dawn has to say something, and then everything goes downhill from here. And these knights start attacking the group, and they have to fend them off. And it's a whole scene, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty well done on top of the Winnebago and everything. But the one thing I really wanted to point out is the fact that as Buffy fights off the knights, we see her kill one and assume that she kills several. And we know that these knights are human beings. We even see Spike punch one and get hurt because of the chip still in his head. So why do you think all of a sudden she's okay with killing these knights?
Well, it's self-defense. So has she said that she doesn't kill humans before?
The whole thing with Faith was like a pretty big deal when Faith killed an actual human.
Yeah. And when she thought Ted was a human and not a robot.
Right.
Yeah. But that's also like how they don't kill Spike now, just because he did bad things in the past, because he's like not directly hurting them right now, like even with demons. Well, no, I guess not with demons, but like, you know, she does like to be fighting before she kills someone needlessly.
Yeah, she won't start it, but she'll finish it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it because it was such a like high stakes situation. Like, they were all gonna die if she didn't kill these guys. I'm sure she's not losing sleep over it.
Yeah, I agree. I forgot all about that fact that, you know, there was a time. We talk about it more on Angel, I think, now, and we haven't really seen Buffy actually, like, slaying anything in such a long time that it just didn't even faze me that I would have to consider that, because, you know, when we were watching Buffy like kick butt in the earlier seasons, it was either like, you know, just staking vampires, which we understood the reasoning behind that, or like we got into these deeper conversations with episodes like you were saying, Karen, with like Ted, and that's his name, right? Ted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these other, like, you know, human kind of crossbreed type things, and not killing Spike, and we haven't had to have any of those conversations lately because we've been dealing with issues like, you know, how Buffy's handling her grief and putting Dawn first. But if someone's coming after Dawn at this point, I don't think anything is going to run through her head. Like, even if I think if Spike made a wrong move and or comment about Dawn at this point, she would have no problem just staking him. Like, I think it's more of a, you know, in the moment, like, if something is threatening Dawn, I'm going to take care of it, and there's no time for questions, which I didn't question either because of, like Ariana pointed out, the stakes of the situation. It's like kind of live or die in everything right now.
Right. And I mean, her number one goal is to protect Dawn. So if they're shooting arrows at her little sister and the only way to stop them is to throw an axe in his chest, like, she's going to do it. I think, yeah, she's kind of at the end of her rope here. And I think it's important to point out and to talk about, but it never really struck me as being like this crazy out of character thing, because I totally agree. Like, the stakes are so high in this moment.
Plus, like, you see people in like night garb. You're not thinking like, these are people from my time and humans. It's sort of like, oh, you're definitely like some supernatural thing. Yeah. I'm just going to take care of you on the spot. Like, unless I was like within 20 miles of a medieval times, I will not question it, that they're not from this world.
Aim for the horses.
Oh, that's so sad, though.
It was. I mean, smart and tactical, but sad.
Yeah, well, I was like, when Tara and Willow were kind of like saying like horsies, I was like, oh my God, this annoying language. Like, please stop using the cutesy word horsies. And
hey.
Then Buffy was like, take them out. I'm like, oh, that's sad. No. Now I'm actually sad and on their side with using the word horsies.
You're never too old to go horsies.
These people are really too old to use 90% of the language that they do. It's my biggest gripe with Buffy as a whole is, and I've said it before, it's how they talk. It's my number one complaint. I've had a lot of complaints. This is one I will never step down from.
Which I think is so interesting, because the dialogue on this show, like, the show is known for its dialogue. Like, this is Whedon-esque dialogue, and it's...
Like, other characters, like, the dialogue is fine, but when I feel like these characters dumb it down so much when they start talking like this.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure that, like, I get that it's very Whedon-esque dialogue, but I don't think everyone can pull it off.
That's fair.
I mean, Tara's lost her mind, so.
Yeah, but for two episodes doesn't make up for the rest of the episode she's been in. She's only lost her mind for two episodes. And Tara's not even the one I'm complaining about.
Yeah, it's Willow.
That's fair. Well, after we get through this battle and they're not that safe. They go to the gas station, the abandoned gas station, and Giles gets seriously injured. Was anybody worried about him?
I started a GoFundMe page immediately for Giles' recovery. I have a campaign out. Please donate. I know this is 20 years old. He's probably fine, but yes, of course I was concerned. It's painful.
Giles
doesn't deserve it.
Yeah. And as Kristen pointed out last night, it was very Wash-like.
Don't.
I know. Serenity, just pointing that out there. We don't need to discuss. It's a sore topic, but yeah, it was a little bit scary. And they bring Ben in to help. And of course, we know how bad of an idea that is. They don't have any clue. And we see him transform. And of course, now Glory is there. But I want to talk a little bit more about Ben and his role, because he's kind of aware at this point, like, what the situation is. And he knows that if Glory gets her hands on the key, he's gone. So there's this moment where he looks like he might be taking out Dawn. And I wanted to know if you guys thought like he would actually do something like that.
I mean, I think he's motivated by, I'm not really sure what he is, but he definitely feels a connection to this like human form of himself. And he has this self-preservation instinct. So if he sees the only way for him to survive is to get rid of Dawn, then I think he would do whatever he could as whatever type of being he is within his power to get rid of the threat of his life becoming obsolete.
But what about the fact that he's a doctor? He's committed to saving people's lives.
I'm not sure. Well, that's a great point. Yes, he is a doctor, but he's also trying to figure out where the line is between, you know, his like life as a professional and then his like life as a human. And I think that if you're faced with a life or death type situation, your kind of moral code of conduct goes out the window if you're trying to save your own life.
Would you agree with that, Ariana?
Sorry, my internet was being weird, so I didn't hear most of it. But I don't know. Ben was weird in this episode. I don't know why he showed up in the first place. Like, he knows he's trouble. I don't know, Ben. I don't know. But I was really confused at the faces he was making. When he was like, I was like, are you going to take Dawn? Are you not?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's kind of not surprising that Ben is thinking about maybe destroying Dawn, because we learn what exactly is going on with Glory, the fact that the other Hell Gods kicked her out. She wants to get back into her dimension and kind of cause chaos. And this key is the only way she can do that, except the problem here being that if she has the key, it's going to sort of open up all the other dimensions and everything's going to be chaos and it's just going to be basically the apocalypse. So this is sort of where the knights come in as well. They say, look, it's too dangerous to keep Dawn around, despite the fact that she's this little human girl now, because if Glory gets her hands on her, like, that's it. We're all done.
Yeah, and I really like the fact that we're finally getting more of the Glory story. Oh, God, rhymes. Because, you know, for so long we've been like, what is the purpose of this key? And it starts to like lose momentum at this point, because, you know, we've been hearing about it for almost 3/4 of a season, like the key, the key, the key. And obviously a key unlocks something or gives someone power to get into something. And it makes more sense now that even the Hell Gods hate Glory enough to kick her out. So the fact that she's trying to, like, you know, she has this motivation of a fall from grace. She's trying to get back to her former status. Like, it kind of gives Glory a bit more motivation than just being like this really self-centered, you know, person that we've been dealing with. It, you know, she has this kind of traumatic story where she feels outcast, and so she's behaving this way because she's used to being on top and used to being in the limelight. And so we see that when she's like dealing with her like little goons, but it also makes sense that she's trying to reclaim something that she lost, and she's definitely overcompensating here.
It also really amps up the stakes for Dawn, because now, like, I was thinking, even if they get rid of Glory, that doesn't get rid of the problems that Dawn could literally end the world. Like, just her existence could end the world. Which is really scary, I think. And it also makes me wonder, like, why the monks even... I don't understand the monks' logic. Like, why did they turn the key into a girl? Why didn't they get rid of the key if they didn't want Glory to get the key? What do they think is important about the key?
Maybe it's some sort of like transfer of energy thing, like where, like, you know, you can't destroy that, so you have to put it somewhere. Although making it a human is probably not the most logical. It could be like, you know, put it in like one, you know, like when they chopped up that guy, like, you know, put all that power in an arm and bury it in the ocean or something so no one can actively get to it. But I was wondering, Adiana, do you think that there might be a way to like remove the key energy and just leave Dawn as a human? Because that's what I was thinking, because I agree. I think that having Dawn as this such like, you know, have as a free radical, basically like at any moment the world could end because something goes wrong with Dawn. I think that could get kind of old with 2 seasons left to go. So do you, or, you know, she might not even make it 2 seasons. But do you think that there's a possibility to make her an actual, like, human after, or do you think that she has to stay this?
I don't know. It's magic is so weird because she's not really a human. I know they keep saying, like, she is now, and I mean, I feel for her, because that would suck if I found out I wasn't real. but like, I don't know. What is she if she's not the key? How would she have a body still? I don't know.
Yeah, it's like when we were watching Pussies, like, don't question the sign.
Yeah.
And Mai has the answer to your question, Adiana, about why the monks made this key into a human in the first place.
Oh, tell me.
Because they were fools. They thought they could harness the powers for forces of light.
Hmm.
And that came from Gregor.
Yeah, the guy they chained up.
That is dumb.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
They failed and paid with their blood.
Yes.
Look, if Don wasn't a kid, I would say that whoever this person was that was the key needed to, like, sacrifice themselves for the good of the world. Mm-hmm. Because I do kind of feel like the knights have a point. And, I mean, I get it, like, why everyone is protecting her, because I would do the same thing. I would be like, no, the whole world can burn before you take my little sister. And I guess Don doesn't really have the, like, maturity yet. But I was really, like, just waiting for Don to be like, look, guys, this is too much. I'm going to end the world.
Yeah, I'm taking you all down with me.
So, and there's a good point in here, too, about why Dawn didn't remember that Ben is glory. And we kind of saw that after she first saw the initial change. And she was like, I don't really remember what happened, but all of a sudden Ben was gone and glory was here and nobody really put two and two together. This felt a little weird to me, to be honest, but, like, obviously convenient for this episode because nobody knows that. That Ben is also glory, so it kind of...
Well, doesn't Dawn know?
But she couldn't remember.
Oh, right, she couldn't forgot. Remember.
It was That's like right. turning was away so from the silence and forgetting that they were there to begin with.
Right. Okay.
I think it's a little bit of a misstep in terms of, like, the plot, but, again, convenient for this episode because they have to bring Ben in. But basically, at the end of the day... Everyone finds out Ben is Glory, then Glory steals Dawn, and now what?
We're finally getting over season five. We're almost to the finish line. yeah, I'm hoping, you know, two-part finale, we're getting to the big final battle between Dawn and, not Dawn, I'm sorry, Buffy and Glory. Buffy... Well, you know, come up with something that'll allow us to get rid of Glory.
Maybe she will learn to harness Dawn's powers for good. Because Dawn, I bet, is super powerful. I mean, she can end the world, so she probably has a lot of power inside her.
Yeah, and we saw how easy it was for her to do that magic with bringing, like, it was effortless to bring back Joyce. You know, like, it wasn't even like there was a little bit of a glitch. It was just sort of like, oh, I'm following these steps and I can do it. Like, there wasn't any complication or lack of faith in Dawn, at least, that she could do it. So she is inherently powerful. So she maybe just needs to figure out how to channel it. And I'm sure, like you were saying, Ariana, Giles can read about something somewhere and Willow can help her with the actual steps. And maybe we can use Dawn as, like, a super weapon. If we can channel her correctly, maybe she can, like, force Glory. She has the key. She can force her to go to some other hell dimension where she's, like, wanted for hanging or something, and they can take care of her there, and no one else here has to deal with her.
You really think Buffy would use Dawn like that?
Well, Dawn would probably agree to it.
Would you use your little sister like that?
If my little sister agreed to do it, yeah.
I would make her do it. If the other option is, hey, like, the world is going to descend into chaos and these knights are going to kill you, then yeah, you need to learn to use your magic.
Well, the knights aren't a problem.
Well, you know what? She can still end the whole world. That is a problem. That's not going away.
It's interesting, though, the idea of being able to harness that and seeing what she could potentially do. All right, let's jump into our favorite scenes and favorite lines now. My favorite scene is the saga of Spike's blackout goggles because I think they look amazing on him. And that kind of transfers into yours, Ariana.
Yeah, mine was when Spike shows up with the Winnebago and, like, it's all blacked out in the windows. But especially I love, like, Giles' face when he walks in and he's just like, ugh. Like, he's so not having it. Yeah.
And yours, Brittany?
Mine was just all the bickering that was taking place, whether it was, like, you know, Xander not feeling well or Anya trying to make snacks and just everyone being annoyed with everyone. And it was just wonderful. And Giles just being so grumpy the whole time.
And Spike commenting on his driving. And
yeah. So slow.
Yeah. And Mai?
Dawn telling the story of how they escaped Gloria in the beginning. Wham! Hellbitch in orbit.
It was so cute. She was trying to make Buffy seem all powerful and awesome, and then yeah, she was
probably
just like
still high on the adrenaline.
Yeah. Well, she got hit by a truck, actually.
I really liked them in the whole episode. Like, thank you and for everything, because you're great.
Yeah, it was. It's they've had their struggles in the past, obviously, but I think they're bonding now, and I think that that's really good to see from Dawn's perspective in particular, because she can be kind of annoying sometimes, but she's very aware of what everybody is sacrificing for her, and I'm so glad that she's grateful for it.
Yeah, I think she's realizing that Buffy's been through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know people like hate Dawn, but she really hasn't annoyed me since like the first couple of episodes.
I was talking to Caitlin the other day, and I was like, you know what? I don't hate her as much as I remember hating her.
Same.
Before. And I don't know if it's like a maturity thing on my end now. Like, I don't find her as annoying, or I'm more understanding that she's a little sister, but all of this must be so scary for her. So I think I can kind of relate to that a little bit more now.
I think it was because I was closer to that age when I watched it, and I wanted her to be cooler.
Yeah. Maybe I saw too much of myself in her. And was like, oh, God, you're so embarrassing.
Yeah, we are so embarrassing. Why can't we be cooler?
Yeah. All right, into favorite lines now. Mine is so stupid, but it's between Ben and one of the minions. And Ben goes, you know why I wanted to be a doctor? And the minion goes, flattering drawstring pants. Like, she's so obsessed with him, and I loved every second of it. But also, like, those drawstring pants, man.
She compliments him a lot.
Yeah.
Like, she's creepily a lot.
Yeah, she's got a crush. Yours is pretty straightforward.
Horsies!
Yeah. It was a cute moment.
Yeah, I would do that.
And Ariana?
Mine was, it's not like a fun line, but I just really loved Spike this whole episode, and he was so nice to, like, Tara and Dawn. So I said, when he told Dawn, I should have nicked that Porsche I had my eye on. There's just enough room for me, you, and Big Sis. Because you made sense. I was like, you're right, Spike. That's what you should have done.
And Brittany, you had a Spike one too.
I did. I really liked when Spike said, buckle up, kids. Daddy's putting the hammer down. Just because I was like, all right, there's the Spike I know. Stop being so nice to people.
He has to walk that line.
That sounds sexual.
It does. That's Spike.
Well, not the first part.
The first part, yeah, that's maybe a little uncomfortable. The rest of it.
Maybe the whole thing. Like, the whole thing together sounds uncomfortable.
All right. That was it for Buffy. So now we're going to jump into Angel, episode 220, Over the Rainbow. In this episode, Cordelia ends up in a hell dimension where she goes from being a slave to Queen Bee in a day, because apparently this girl can talk herself into anything. Very interesting twist at the end there. So, Ariana, I believe you wrote this in here about the beginning of the last episode and the end of the last episode and the beginning of this episode. So do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I love how they flowed into each other. I just thought these two worked really well together as like watching them together, because I love how they're kind of like bookends. Like, the last episode ends with Dawn getting taken, and this episode starts with Angel being like, we have to get Cordy back. So, like, the right momentum, I felt like, was working if you're watching them back-to-back from each other. It's still the same, like, stressful. Because you feel stressed out, like, no, Dawn is gone. And then you come in, and you're like, no, Cordelia is gone. So I really liked that. And then I also like how, like, then they find Cordy at the end. Mm-hmm. So gives some resolution.
Yeah. And I like how you put in here too, it also highlights how Cordy is essentially Angel's Dawn.
Yeah. Because that's what I kind of realized in this episode, is that I feel like the way that Buffy feels about Dawn is very similar to the way that Angel feels about Cordelia, in that I feel like he's very protective of her and he feels like he needs to protect her, and she's like his little sister figure.
But he also knows how powerful she is, like, and what an asset she is. And I think that's reflected.
I don't know, because that's what I was thinking. Like, Wesley and Angel's different reactions to this situation, I think, highlight a lot about themselves as people, mm-hmm. but also how they view Cordelia. Because I think in some, like, you know how sometimes when you care about people so much, you can't really see how strong they are. And mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes Angel is like that with Cordelia. I think he just, like, loves her so much that in some ways he still sees her as this person who needs to be protected. And whereas Wesley, I think, has a much more objective view of her and seeing how capable she is and being like, it's okay. We don't have to go in right now. We're all just going to die. Let's collect ourselves. And then we can all come back alive. And having a little bit more faith that she could handle herself, you know, for a few hours in there.
Do you think that also shows how naive Wesley may be and how Angel is aware of what a hell dimension can be like?
That is true. I hadn't considered that point of view.
To be fair, I really like your perspective on it too, because I think that's also true.
Yeah, well, I also think Wesley is just like a more logical person in general, and Angel mm-hmm. is... I think he thinks more with his heart than his head sometimes, similar to how Buffy is.
Mm-hmm. He's very emotional.
Yeah. And he reacts very emotionally to this.
Mm-hmm. And before everything kind of gets kicked off, we do see a couple of Wolfram and Hart lawyers show up. And in particular, Daniel Day Kim, who will go on to be on Lost, which very exciting to see him on there. Not that I was a huge Lost fan, but I just think he's very handsome. So it was cool to see him there. But Angel is having nothing with these guys. He does not care what they have to say at all. But, you know, just a reminder, Wolfram and Hart, still a thing.
This was so annoying because I felt just like Angel when they came on. I was like, what are you doing here? Like, no one cares. Cordelia's missing. Like, no one cares if you're trying to take away his building, whatever. As you say, are you trying to annoy me to death?
Yeah.
I really liked that whole scene. Just it could because of the reaction that it, like, elicited from me and Angel, like Ariana was saying. Like,
why? Did you also turn into a vampire?
Well, duh, that's what I do now after watching so much of David Boreanaz. So just like seeing them and being reminded like, oh, right, like this whole big overarching plot thing, like it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because I care so much about these characters that I don't care about like the impending apocalypse. And I think that is such a different reaction to what I'm having with Buffy right now. And so like with Buffy, I care about the Glory plotline because I'm like really interested in like this, like Glory's motivation. And like I said, we finally got to figure out like, oh, she needs the key because she was kicked out of her hell dimension. And, you know, like I was really interested in that. Whereas here I'm like, oh my God, Wolfram and Hart, go away. The apocalypse can happen like next Tuesday. But right now I have to deal with my characters freaking out over the fact that someone's missing. So it was just a weird contrast to, like, you know, have one episode. And it kind of goes into what Ariana was saying earlier, these book-ended episodes. Like, one episode I really care about, like, the ability to destroy the world. And here I'm like, oh my God, destroying the world is so a problem for Buffy. Let's talk about the characters here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like this episode really highlighted how much of it rests on the relationships between everybody here. Specifically, I think now it's coming towards like Angel and Cordelia and like what she represents for him.
Yeah, and that's not to say that I didn't enjoy, like we were talking about that scene where, you know, Dawn is apologizing for, you know, being this burden. And I really loved that moment. And I also agree, I am enjoying Dawn as a character more towards the end of this season. So that's not to say Buffy isn't doing the same type of character work, but I'm definitely more invested in the bigger like apocalypse end of the world type plot in that show than I am in Angel, because like they pointed out here very clearly, it's just annoying at this point. Like, stop reminding me that Wolfram and Hart exists. I don't care at this moment.
That's fair. And that being said, we can shift gears away from them now, because I really want to talk about Gunn and what's been going on with him recently, because after Cordy is taken, he has this very interesting reaction in that he's not interested in going after her because he just lost a really close friend of his. And it's because he's been taking so much time hanging out with Angel and the others, saving the world. And like, yes, that is obviously a very good thing to do, but he's kind of stepping away from his community and he feels responsible for his friend's death because of that. And I mean, in the end, he obviously kind of comes back to them and I think he kind of sees the bigger picture and everything. But Adriana, you made a good point in the doc and you said that this arc is something that maybe a lot of people of color can relate to. So you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that they kind of went there. I mean, maybe they weren't even thinking of it like this. But from the beginning, Gunn's arc to me has been really interesting in how he feels like torn between two different places and essentially like two different families. And I feel like this is very, like, him joining Angel Investigations has been, in some ways, been, like, the journey of assimilation. I don't know how to explain it quite properly. But, like, this, the way how sometimes, like, say, for example, even, like, just going to college, you know what I mean? And for a lot of POC, like, going to college is maybe the first time that you are not the majority in your group of peers, like the first time that you're in like a white majority kind of situation and feeling like you don't really fit in there, but then you come back home and everyone's like, oh, you've changed now. you act like a white person now. So I think it's really interesting that they've kind of had this arc for him. Because I think it is a struggle that a lot of POC go to in trying to like balance two cultures, or immigrants also, but he's not an immigrant. So, but yeah, I think it's interesting.
And what did you think about the idea that he did come back?
I think he made the right choice because logically, he can do more good at Angel Investigations because with his, well, I don't know if he can do more good because he was the leader of the other group, but they're kind of like battling things daily. It's more like, you know, let's keep our city safe versus, well, I guess Angel has the resources. He has the resources, he has the visions, and he has the history books, and he has the resources to be able to do more good. So, yeah, I mean, it's like real life, right? Where are the resources? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm torn. I mean, for the sake of the show, I'm glad he came back.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, but I agree. Like, one of the strongest aspects of his character has always been the love of his community and his friends and kind of taking in these wayward kids and doing something good with them. So it's sort of, I mean, and who knows, like, I'm not necessarily saying that aspect of his character is gone, but in this moment, you can kind of see his shift here. And while I think it's sad that, you know, he does have to sort of leave them behind because they don't know if they're ever going to get back from Pylea. So like, he could be sacrificing everything to go save Cordelia. And the idea that he's willing to do that is a pretty big decision. But when he jumps in that car, you can see he's comfortable with the decision he's made.
I think in some ways also his decision may have been spurred on by the fact that he did just lose his friend. Like, he wasn't there and his friend died. And maybe he doesn't want that to happen again.
Right. So somebody else who's very hesitant to go back to Pylea is Lorne. We learn a little bit about his origin story and the fact that like there's no music on Pylea except he always heard music. So he was always very different from his family and his friends and everyone else in that Hell dimension. And I mean, we kind of knew that to begin with, but this is a little bit more of a look into his life and how he built the karaoke bar, where he landed and all of that. And he really does not want to go back, but he goes and visits a friend of his. And his friend is a psychic. Her name is Aggie. And actually, fun fact, she played Aura in Welcome to the Hellmouth, the very first episode of Buffy. She was one of the girls in the locker room where the dead body fell out. I thought it was a fun
what
fact.
What a fun fact.
Thanks, guys.
No problem, Karen.
Double duty, though. I always think that's kind of funny when they do things like that. But he goes to her for advice, and she's all like, well, sometimes the journey is taken simply because it must be taken. And Lauren's like, oh God, is that what I sound like? So they have a really fun dynamic, but this is a little look like this is, we're getting a perspective. We're getting Lauren's perspective here, and we're seeing him away from the group, meeting somebody we've never met before. And it's this little expansion into the universe that's not really a big deal in this moment, but kind of shows you like there are other people around that we haven't met that are maybe, you know, very similar to what the rest of these guys are doing. And I just thought it was kind of a fun scene.
Yeah, I like that we're expanding. Like, it's not just Lauren who is doing this around town. And, you know, we're getting, I like anytime we get a little bit more about Los Angeles in general, like what is around and how all of these people came here for, you know, and set up their own little communities, just like he set up his karaoke bar and that's where people come to, and he's comfortable there because there's music and that's the life he's escaping and he can be himself there. And he has this other community that he's found and reached out to and built. And this is, you know, it all feeds into this idea of LA as this like type of character in a sense, like this is why we're setting Angel here. So I always like getting a little bit more of what's actually going on in LA and these different characters.
I just think it's a wonderful insight into Lauren himself. He built a karaoke bar where he landed, and he tells you his your future when you sing, and he comes from a world where music doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that must have been pretty scary for him to come into this world and decide to do this, but it's obviously something that really spoke to him. And yeah, I love the idea that he heard music. He didn't even understand what it was, but he heard music in his head, and it was this dream he needed to follow. And it's very inspiring, very Los Angeles too, very Hollywood. So in the end, they all decide, duh, we have to go after Cordelia. Let's do this. So they jump into the car and they figure out how to get into the Hell Dimension, and they drive right through. And there's a really great moment, and it's my favorite quote, so I'm not going to quote it now. But Angel thinks he's going to burst into flame, except he doesn't. Different dimension, works a different way. He gets his moment in the sun. And now, Ariana and Brittany, I know you guys love the look on Angel's face whenever he's got this just pure happiness there. This must have been great for you guys.
I don't know what gave that away. I mean, like, not like I ever talk about Angel in that way. But yes, I did enjoy Angel literally having his moment in the suns. Because apparently whenever you travel to another dimension, there has to be two suns. That's just, you know, Star Trek did it. Everyone does it. There's always two suns.
A galaxy far, far away.
So many suns. But I'm really happy for him. And he was so excited. Like, it didn't matter anything, whatever anyone else was saying in that moment. He's like, I'm not on fire. I'm not on fire. Guys, I'm not on fire. He was so cute.
Yep.
Yes, we're all heartily aware that you're not on fire. And then they lost the book.
Yeah, they did lose the book, which may be problematic. We'll have to see. But even though, okay, we're going to kind of backtrack a little bit because the episode does start off with Cordelia. So we're going to talk about Cordelia now. The fact that she landed there, the fact that she gets attacked, quote unquote, by this like dog creature who's actually super cute until its owner walks on by and calls her a cow and sells her into slavery. She gets shackled up. She gets this collar around her neck and she has to do all these horrible chores. She's not having any of it, but she very quickly realizes that the shock collar is kind of painful. So she falls in line and she meets Fred. So we get our first really good look at Fred here. And she might be a little crazy. So I kind of wanted to know your guys's first reactions to seeing her.
Well, crazy, sure. But I watched Amy Acker play Root on Person of Interest first, and that bitch is crazy. So Fred wasn't actually that far of a stretch for what I have just come to know as Amy Acker playing a really weird and like homicidal character. So I liked her. I liked her introduction. I like the contrast she has with Cordy, and I'm kind of glad that they ran into each other in this place. So like, you know, because we were talking about, or not we were, Lauren was saying, like, you know, oh, the portal can open anywhere. Like, we can end up on the complete opposite side of this world. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of glad that they threw her with Fred. I mean, it makes the most logical narrative sense to do that as well. But I'm glad that we are meeting Fred.
Adriana, what did you think?
I mean, I think she's crazy. But I mean, I understand why she's crazy. She's been living in that slave dimension for, how long did they say? When did she taken? 5 years.
So it's no wonder she's gone a little crazy. But lest we forget, she also was able to disable her collar. So she's also a smart cookie. And she's trying to give Cordelia some tips on how to survive, give her some information. And even though she's, I think, a little broken right now, there's still clearly a part of her that is fighting against everything that she's come to know in the last 5 years, which is pretty heroic.
Well, yeah, I think she's also trying to get information from Cordelia. Mm-hmm. I think that's, I mean, maybe she did do it out of the goodness of her heart. But I think the reason she risked herself was to go and be like, hey, so where did you come in from? To try and figure out. I think she's still trying to get back. That's what it seemed like.
And unfortunately, Cordelia has to deal with some stuff. Fred's help doesn't really come at a good time. She's taken. She has a vision, and they say that she's cursed, and they test her. And we don't really know how they tested her, although it looked painful. There was plenty of sharp instruments there. And we're not, yes, and we're not entirely sure what exactly is going on yet, because the boys come through and they hear about this girl with visions and the test and the screaming and everything, and they kind of all end up in one place, and you're thinking Cordelia is going to be like, you know, hanging by her thumbs or something like this. She's going to be bloody and broken, and no, she's got this Vegas showgirl outfit on, you know, grapes in one hand and people with fans in the other. I don't think that was actually the case, but you know, obviously she's sitting high on her throne, and that was quite the twist. What did you guys think of that?
It was, yes, it was a twist, but also as soon as it happened, I was like, of course, like, of course this is how it ends, because, you know, Cordelia is not, like we were saying earlier, she's stronger than I think most people give her credit for, and she just made it work for her. And so you have her just sitting there being like, oh, I don't need you guys, like, I've got everything pretty much figured out here, even though she kind of does need them to get her back. But you know, she's not a damsel in distress. She is making the best of her situation.
That was really nice to see after, like, Angel was so freaked out and so worried the whole episode. It was like, she's like, nah, I'm fine.
Yeah, and so Cordelia's title, we learn, is the Venerable Monarch of Pylea, General of the Ravenous Legion, Eater of Our Enemies' Flesh, Prelate of the Sacrificial Blood Rites, and Sovereign Proconsul of Death. And then we see Cordy. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. We're going to have to find out next week how that goes from there. But let's jump into favorite scenes right now. My favorite scene was when Gunn returns to his boys so they can go to the Hell Dimension and save their best girl. I think that was a really big decision for Gunn, and I love that they're all just coming together for Cordelia. I also loved yours.
Yeah, mine is Wes's Eureka moment, because yep. That's a thing he actually does on the regular often enough that Aang notices.
Yeah. And Ariana?
Mine was Angel totally freaking out when he realizes Cordelia is missing, because, yeah, that's his boo. She can't leave.
Mm-hmm. And Brittany?
Mine was actually meeting Fred, because even though she is, like, batshit crazy, she's probably going to be fantastic if she's anything like her character, Root.
And that's Amy Acker. She's
Amy Acker awesome. Is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Favorite lines, mine was the Angel one when he's like, can everyone just notice how much fire I'm not on? Like, he is so jazzed. And even though this is like, you know, they're within reach of Cordelia and everything, he just has to take his moment and be like, guys, I'm not on fire.
His moment in the sun.
And my, your line, classic.
Hi, guys. She's so cute.
Yeah. She's eating it up. Mm-hmm. Ariana?
So mine is more the delivery, David Boreanaz's delivery, because he is such a good actor. Mm-hmm. And in that scene when she gets taken, he goes through such a weird, like, range of emotions. So I loved when he was like, is this thing out of batteries? But, like, so genuinely, like, not ironically at all. But then also when he's like, no, we have to go right now. And Wesley's like, no, we can't. And he just goes, it's Cordy. And they agree they have to go. And then also when he's so sad and sitting on the stage and he's like, I just got her back.
I know. Oh. That one really hurt, actually.
Yeah. That's the worst one.
Brittany?
Mine was also going off of Ariana's, the whole just Angel being so desperate to get back and Wesley being the practical one. And Wesley says, I don't think that's a good idea. And Angel's like, I don't think I care. And he's just so desperate to get Cordelia back. And he just doesn't care about logic or reason or anything in that moment. He just wants action.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's cool.
And it's like, you know, a little taste of, like, the sassy and jealous, too, which yeah. makes me happy. It's as close as we'll get with him being that desperate and being just like, I don't think I care. And I was like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that wraps up our discussion for this week. As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find this post on hypeable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we love iTunes reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will treat you like the Pylian queen. You know you are. Let's jump into listener feedback now. And Ariana, will you read this first one?
Sure. This one is from Paley Lewis at Hypeable. And he said, or she, I don't actually know if Paley is male or female or nonconforming. The newbie predictions are killing me. I would love to see their live reactions to the season finale. There is so much packed in. A podcast can't do it justice.
It's going to be something. That's for sure.
I actually don't think that live reactions work because I don't speak when I'm watching television.
Yeah, I think, Ariana, didn't we try to live tweet? We tried to live tweet that episode of Avatar that one time, and I think we tweeted like maybe 10 times total because yeah. it's better just to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can set up a camera and we can see your facial reactions.
But you know, like that Tumblr like meme where it's like it, you know, the post and like, oh my god, like this is happening, like crying 1,000 tears, and then it like is the picture of the person just staring blankly dead-faced at the TV. That's exactly how I watch TV. Like, I don't ever really elicit emotion.
I'm the opposite.
I also rarely elicit emotion.
I react very strongly to television. Like, I gasp a lot and sit up in my chair. And
same.
I've been told I'm entertaining to watch. Natalie told me that once when we watched an episode of Teen Wolf together.
I'm involved.
Yes. Yes.
I also don't like watching TV with, like, other people. I prefer to watch it, like, by myself.
I do, too. I 100% agree. I get, like, so frustrated anytime I want to watch something and someone else is, like, around. I'm like, no, this is not going
to
work.
I watch other people to see if they're enjoying it properly.
Me too. Okay, clearly we are a divided podcast. All right. The next comment is from Joe Giovanetti, who says, "Hi, Mitch. I'm originally from Syracuse. There's nothing interesting about the city beyond the mall and Syracuse University. I would suggest extending your road trip 30 minutes and head to Ithaca. Lots of waterfalls and gorges. Also, David Boreanaz went to Ithaca College. Good luck." I grew up in about an hour south of Syracuse, and yes, I don't know. I like Syracuse. Maybe it's because I'm not really from there, so, like, it's all interesting to me. But Ithaca, there used to be a shirt called Ithaca is Gorgeous. 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 And it was a great, great t-shirt. And it is really super beautiful there. So if anyone gets a chance to visit upstate New York, head to Ithaca.
I never wanted to, but now I do just because of Joe Giovanetti.
And
it's a canyon joke.
Yes. Brittany, can you read this last one?
Sure. So this is from Vicky Ngoy. Sorry about that. The comment is, "A spoiler-free comment for the last three episodes of Buffy and Angel. I find it particularly jarring to switch from one show to the other because of the difference in tone. I prefer to watch the last four episodes of Buffy from Tough Love through The Gift. Angel from Belonging to There's No Place Like Prusgorb. The first time I watched those episodes of Angel, I hated them. I thought that the show was all over the place. The sudden shift in Azuma's camp fantasy territory didn't work for me. Now I don't mind them as much because I focus on the character's arc and the underlying story." I have to say, I agree. Because I was on 2 weeks in a row, it helped a little bit, but like having to switch from like Buffy Angel. But when I am off a week of the podcast, I watch them in a row because I agree. I like watching like the Angels back to back. And I've been enjoying watching the Buffys back to back because I think that the stories are so separate that, and the tone is a little bit different. I think I'm tending to agree with that.
So to wrap up, we're going to do Ariana's assumptions and Brittany's brainstorms. We've got Buffy 521, The Weight of the World, and Angel 221, Through the Looking Glass.
I think Angel's pretty self-explanatory, where you are through the looking glass, literally. We're in another dimension, and they're probably going to have to manipulate Cordy's power in order to work on a way to get home from there. So if like Cordy's in charge, she can like still play that part and be the queen while they do some legwork and like pretend to be her servants, which I think would be hilarious because she should be in charge more.
So I am kind of different from Vicky and I guess some other people in that I kind of like the difference in tone between these two, and I think it'll continue. The Weight of the World, I think, is probably going to be pretty heavy since they're searching for Dawn, and she's probably not going to be made a queen at the end of the episode. but I think Through the Looking Glass will probably, I think it will be pretty campy. Like, hopefully Angel gets to be Cordy's servant at some point. But I kind of like that because Buffy is getting really heavy right now, and so I like the humor that comes afterwards so I can, like, decompress and not like slip my wrists after watching this. But I also think it makes like logical sense for Angel to be in this other dimension with his other people, because otherwise I feel like Buffy would probably call him for help and then he'd have to be on her show.
That's a good call. I agree, though. I think that Buffy's going to be pretty heavy again next week. I think Buffy's going to be pretty heavy until we get rid of this Glory person, or you know, we're just watching the Glory show the next two seasons and they didn't rebrand the series. So
no, she's not a good enough villain for that. I don't feel like she's a 3 seasons long villain.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping we see Dawn a lot. Like, you know, we're seeing Dawn in captivity and not just Buffy freaking out the whole time, because I feel like the world could fall on either of their shoulders at this point.
I think it might be Dawn realizing that the weight of the world is literally on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And she might try and, maybe she will, you know, take one for the team or decide to do something.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, Ben, the weight of the world is kind of on Ben's shoulders too. So Ben needs to step it up or something.
Yeah, Ben needs to do something. Get his priorities in line.
He's got fantastic hair. What more do you want? And those comfy drawstring pants. All right. Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in and listening to us talk about Buffy and Angel. We will be back next week. And until then, I'm Karen.
I'm Mai.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.